Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Life and Art from FT Weekend. I'm Lila Raptopoulos, and this is our Easter weekend special. It's nearly springtime, and the flowers are budding, April is beckoning, and in this episode on your holiday weekend, we thought we would do something a little bit different. We have invited the editors of FT Globetrotter on to help inspire some ideas for small trips away this spring. Globetrotter is our insider guide to great cities. Readers rely on their guides when they're traveling to find restaurants and hotels, get acquainted with a city, and make the most out of their holidays. All that is to say, they know what makes a great trip. So today, they're going to give us their top tips for springtime travel. And that's it. Let's get into it. I'm Lila here in New York, and I'm a weekend bag with a bikini and a raincoat. With me from London is the editor of Globetrotter, Rebecca Rose. She has packed light but paid extra for the legroom seats. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here. And with Becca in London is Globetrotter's deputy editor, Nikki Blasina. She has a dog-friendly hotel room and an early morning flight home. Hi, Nikki.
Hello.
I'm so happy to have you both here. I thought that maybe to start off, we could set the scene for listeners a little. I would love to hear from you what you love about traveling in the spring. Like, are there any perks to traveling in the spring?
Ooh. I would say yes. I mean, depending on where you live, there are some bank holidays or days off work you can work with. And then the weather. I mean, the weather's getting better. It's not too hot, depending on where you're going. And the sun is shining.
This is the time to go on a city break, I think. Cities can be quite challenging in winter, and when the sun comes out, the blossom comes out, that's the time to go. Although, unfortunately, everyone else obviously has the same idea.
Yeah, yeah. Spring also feels sort of hopeful to me. I feel like wherever you're going to visit, people are really coming to life. At least in New York, everybody feels like it's like they just woke up from some zombie apocalypse. Okay, so this episode, we're just kind of going to try to chat through a bunch of tips with you and break it down into all the different stages of a trip. So like planning and staying and exploring. And to start, I thought we would talk a little bit about deciding where to go. I know people will choose based on, you know, the length of their trip and how far the place is from home and all that things. But are there places that you visited in the spring that you've really loved or places that you want to go specifically in the spring?
This year, I'm thinking about heading to the Mediterranean, actually, because I'm now no longer afraid of cold water because I swim all year round in the UK. And surely the water is going to be warmer in the Mediterranean. So I'm thinking, you know, I could do a beach holiday in April. It doesn't have to be that warm, really, for me.
I'd
be happy to jump in.
Yeah. What about you, Nikki?
For me, well, depending on where you're listening from, this may be long haul or not, but I think obviously the ultimate kind of dream at this time of year is to go to Tokyo to see the cherry blossom. It's such a wonderful time to be in the city. And you also have, I will say the same thing about Vancouver as well, which is on the other side of the Pacific.
And which is where you're from.
Exactly. That's my home city. And that's, you know, it's another really stunning city in terms of the cherry blossoms in spring. And you have these amazing clear sky, beautiful days. But I think with both cities as well, you end up getting the best of kind of winter and spring in one because you can ski on the local mountains. And then you can also sort of have these amazing days sort of sitting on patios and enjoying the kind of ocean and the views and all of that. And then I'd also say Madrid is amazing in spring. It's such a fun, vibrant city, and it's a great time to go before it actually gets too hot and the city becomes unbearable. But this is when the city really, really comes alive.
Yeah, that's great advice. Cities that are about to get very hot and very crowded.
Yeah, exactly.
But aren't quite yet. Yeah. I have a question actually for both of you about flights. I realized recently I was booking a flight to Mexico and I had some points and I thought maybe I'll splurge on an upgrade. I really haven't done that almost ever. And I thought about it and then I didn't do it. And when I got on the flight, The business class was like kind of sad, and I felt very relieved that I hadn't spent all my points or done that. And it made me wonder, like, how am I supposed to know when it's worth splurging on like a nicer seat or on an upgrade in a plane? And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that.
Well, when I'm traveling to DC in May also for the FT Weekend Festival, and I think I'm going to splash out on a bit of extra legroom. I'm really tall and I've got a bad back, and I think it could be a disaster to be on a plane for 8 hours, kind of squashed up in an economy seat, which I will be. So I think that'll be my big splurge of the year. But honestly, it's not always worth it. I think for short flights, just grab something tasty to eat, take it with you, a little whatever. If you want to have a bottle of sparkling wine, buy it from a supermarket at the airport. You don't need to pay a fortune for all of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Idea. I think long haul is the way to do it. I always fly economy just by nature of my own personal economics. but if I could fly business, I would definitely do it. Or, you know, or get away with it on expenses. I would definitely do it for a long haul flight. My family lives on the west coast of Canada in Vancouver. And if I could do that 9.5 hour London to Vancouver flight in business class, I certainly would. But
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any thoughts also? This is sort of related, but on packing, like, when should you bring a carry-on bag versus checking?
This is something that Nikki and I talk about all the time.
really?
Basically, we are at the other end of the spectrum. I am a hold girl. I have to put my luggage in the hold because I am absolutely incapable of packing a small carry-on bag. I actually have booked a carry-on bag because I'm going away with a group of friends soon. And I'm already really anxious about it. I mean, I literally do not know how I'm going to fit 4 days' worth of clothes into something so small, whereas Nikki is an absolute pro. So I would defer to her for tips on this.
Yes. I never, ever check a bag if I can avoid it.
Really?
I just am too anxious about something happening to it. My tip for that is to make a list of what you plan on doing and what clothes you might need for that. And then just try and bring garments that kind of all go together and that you can mix and match. A capsule wardrobe, I think, is the trendy term for it.
Yeah.
Leave the serums at home. don't go big on toiletries. You've got to cut back on that. And don't bring too many pairs of shoes.
I found that actually something really changed my life, which is just having a small toiletry bag that is travel sized that I just keep and I put in every time I travel. I don't have to make decisions anew. That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And also just collect, save samples of things. I do that a lot. If you get a little moisturizer sample, and this is maybe a bit tacky. I save everything because in case, you know, you need a moisturizer or like a makeup primer or things like that you don't necessarily need to pack the whole big bottle of. Just save everything small that you have in your travel bag.
I've got so much to learn from this. I have come to accept that I'm a 3-wash bag kind of girl.
3 bags.
I won't go into what's in each one, but just trust me, I need all 3.
Okay, so let's talk about hotels. So options are plentiful. You've got Airbnbs, you've got like a little cozy inn, you've got a luxury hotel, you've got a corporate hotel. I'm curious sort of how you decide which to choose. I imagine it depends on the destination. Like, you know, I did a long weekend in Savannah once and it was really fun to stay at like a nice old bed and breakfast in the quaint historic district with a 4-poster bed and that sort of thing. But in Paris, maybe you would choose something different. But how do you both think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it depends. It depends on the trip and what you're going for. I quite like an Airbnb if I'm doing a group trip with friends, because I think it's quite nice for everyone to be together. I like that sort of nostalgic vibe of, you know, being in university or your 20s and you're all getting ready together and getting ready to go out for the day or getting ready to go out for the evening. In terms of, I think it also, as you said, it depends on the destination and what you're planning to do and your budget as well. What works with your budget, and also just like if you're going to, you know, a spa hotel in the mountains, obviously you kind of want lots of amenities on site. You want it to have like a decent restaurant, somewhere you can kind of pad around in your robe all day, reading your book, going to the pool. Some are just sort of very laid back.
Yeah, my travels are usually defined by whether or not I'm going with my children. I've tried pretty much every sort of combination over the years. So we've done all piling into one hotel room just to keep the budget down, which means no sleep, but a lot of fun. the interconnecting room thing in a hotel, which is just sort of eye-wateringly expensive, as any parents out there will know. But really the best thing for me with the kids is to hire an apartment or an Airbnb, because sometimes you just don't want to go to a restaurant. You just want to go and make a bowl of pasta and eat it quietly in front of Netflix.
Right. Even when you're somewhere else.
Even when you're somewhere else, especially if you're on a city break and you've dragged them around museums and into all sorts of grown-up places, they just need a bit of downtime to let their hair down.
Totally. That's really good advice. Let's talk about staying. So we've gotten to our location. I'm curious from you, Nikki, like how, when you get to a city, do you get your bearings? Like, how do you get a first sense of a new place on the first day?
Ooh, that's a good question. It sort of depends on the time you've arrived. I've recently started sort of changing my travel times around a little bit, where I like to actually fly after work and just take the extra day off so I can be there first thing in the morning. And actually get up, go find a really cool cafe, speak to the people there, have a pastry and kind of get a feel for the neighborhood I'm staying in and make my plans for the day. I love exploring cities on foot, and that's usually how I get my bearings. Explore the neighborhood you're staying in. You've probably done some research about it already, and that's why you've chosen that place. And just get out there, really.
I like to look for a rooftop bar. Get up high, is what I say. As high as you can, and that gives you a good perspective and just gives you a sense of the size of the city, because I think that's something that's really hard to kind of have a feel for at street level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good idea. I went to Lisbon a few years ago for the first time for a few days alone, and I was there for a few nights, and I'd never been, and you both know that I'm terrible at planning, so I had no plan when I got there. And someone suggested a free walking tour just to get a lay of the land. And I actually found it really, really helpful on that first day. And I also found it helpful to just go to a bar that like was active and I knew that there were some tourists in it and just be like, all right, I'm going to have a glass of wine by myself alone. And by the end of the glass of wine, if I'm not talking to anybody, then whatever, I'll go get dinner. But let's see. And by the end of the wine, by the end of the glass of wine, I was like in this long gossipy conversation with these two British women who had come alone to get away from their husbands, and had a very nice time.
No, that's amazing. And like, that's exactly it, isn't it? I mean, especially if you're traveling alone, that's for a lot of us a bit uncomfortable. So if you are willing to kind of get out of your comfort zone, why not push yourself a bit further?
Mm. I like to head to the nearest museum, actually. That's kind of the first thing that I would do, is look for the biggest, most impressive art collection and get down there, and just usually quite often free to go and just have an hour wandering around. It really gives you a sense of the place and the history and the people there. And I just find that a very kind of gentle way to ease yourself into a city.
Yeah,
totally. And how they sort of describe their art or their culture to the outside world is kind of interesting in a museum too. So you're in the city and you're choosing restaurants. And I imagine we should have thought about this a little bit before we got to the city.
Lila.
So maybe to start, I know. So maybe we start with, like, if we planned well, what would we have done? How do you choose some good restaurants before you land?
I think you have to ask people who live there. That's always our first port of call. And once you've got a few places you want to go to, I think we've talked about this before, actually, but book one or two. You don't want to kind of turn up to somewhere at 7 o'clock expecting a table and not be able to get one for 3 months or something. So this kind of planning, you need to, Lila, this is going to be a shock for you. You need to start planning several weeks before. But then there's, you know, it's nice to leave something to chance, isn't it, Nikki?
Yeah, you never know what you might stumble into if you just sort of see an interesting doorway or a bunch of people gathered around somewhere. Just pop your head in, see what it's like.
Yeah, tell me about that. Like, I mean, of course, I'm going to say if you're just in the city and forgot to make reservations, but also say you've, you know, decided on a few places you knew you wanted to go ahead of time and then you left a few nights free. What would you recommend?
I like thinking about what is the special dish of that city. You know, if you go to Milan, where can I go and get the best cotoletto milanese? Or, you know, focus around that. Then you can definitely kind of have a quick Google and get some ideas for that, or simply ask somebody in the road or ask somebody in a cafe.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Okay, so for the last category of questions, I would love to do a sort of speed round of sorts where I sort of ask you for final tips that are more specific to a type of trip a person might be taking. Why don't we start with a romantic trip away? What would be a tip or two for a romantic trip with a partner?
I would say the most important thing is to leave your children at home, if you have any. Which Good. Is obviously very tricky to do for lots of people. But the other thing is, try to go for 2 or 3 nights, because I feel like there's a lot of pressure if you just go away for one night to have a romantic mm-hmm. time, and inevitably you're sort of tired and exhausted and may have an argument. So 2 or 3 nights. And I like a hotel personally if I'm going away with my husband, especially one that has a little bar where you can have a drink when you arrive or have a little drink before you go out exploring.
Yeah, great advice. This one's for Nikki. What would your tips be if you're doing a getaway with a dog?
I also like how you phrase it as a getaway with a dog. should you find one for the weekend?
right, with your dog.
This is something I think a lot about. My tips would be to find out, is obviously you have to book a dog-friendly hotel, but find out exactly what they mean when they say they're dog-friendly, because there's a difference between a hotel being dog-friendly in the sense that your dog can just stay in the hotel room, or they can sit in the car while you're having dinner at the restaurant or something like that. Right. And then there's a difference between, you know, they can come with you into the reception area or to the lobby bar and kind of sit at your feet while you read a book or do any of those things. So that's a big one. And then always, and this goes for actually just booking restaurants in general, you'll probably book a dog-friendly restaurant, but just make sure you always let people know on your reservation that you're bringing your dog with you. It's just the polite thing to do. And I always try and tell people that, you know, bringing a dog somewhere is actually a privilege and not a right. And some guests don't always feel like they should be in a restaurant. So just make sure you let them know in the booking so they can give you kind of a table in the corner or whatever they prefer to do.
Yeah. Okay. That's such a good one. All right. My next one is for Rebecca. What would your tip be for a holiday with children?
We have been to a couple of hotels actually, which have run treasure hunts for the kids, which have been really brilliant because they've been able to run around the hotel and collect things from different rooms. And that's just give them, you know, as I said earlier, a real sense of independence. So hard to find one of those in advance, but when you do, it's gold dust. One thing I've worked out recently is giving your children a small amount of pocket money at the beginning of the holiday and telling them it has to last them the whole holiday. And then they can work out how to spend it. And rather than them asking you to buy things sort of every 2 seconds, they have to work out their own budget.
That's a really good idea.
That's good, yeah.
Amazing. And then my last one is just tips if you like want to get into trouble. If you want to have sort of an adventure or a story or a crazy night or something, what would you say?
See, this is my tip for traveling without kids, was to actually just be very childish. say yes to everything, get drunk, go dancing, have a night out and sort of, you know, sleep in a bit the next day and just like do the things that you don't normally get to do, or get a bit silly.
Get in a fountain. Yeah. Jump in a fountain. That's definitely going to get you into trouble.
Nikki and Rebecca, this was such a delight, so much fun, and gave me a million ideas. So thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
That's the show. Thank you for listening to Life and Art from FT Weekend. Take a read through the show notes. We have links to everything mentioned today, including Rebecca and Nikki's recommendations and related Globetrotter pieces. Every link that goes to the FT gets you past the paywall. Also in the show notes is a discount to a subscription to the Financial Times and ways to stay in touch with me on email and on Instagram. As you know, I love hearing from you. I am Lila Raptopoulos, and here's my talented team. Katya Kumkova is our senior producer. Lulu Smith is our producer. Zach St. Louis is our contributing producer. Our sound engineers are Breen Turner and Sam Javinko, with original music by Metaphor Music. Topher Forges is our executive producer, and our global head of audio is Cheryl Brumley. Have a lovely holiday weekend, and we'll find each other again on Monday.